Once I get it up and pin it, it's stable enough for me then to just draw the wires out and essentially guy off the thing. And I've had wonderful luck with that. The other thing you can do is you can make the wire, the ropes at the end of your dipole very, very long. So as long as you've got the space, you can extend them out so that the ends of your dipole can approach 30 feet and be nearly horizontal as opposed to an inverted V, which is very good too. So, you know, it's just a matter of how much space you have. And I use parachute cord wrapped up on a 18-inch wooden reel made out of plywood or masonite, and that works out real well. So that's something else to think about as well. Comments?
W2SE, a couple of comments.
Go ahead, Mr. Bruce.
Okay, I use a couple of different types of ropes. I use 550 paracord because it's dirt cheap. I get it in Campmore. It's about $5 for 100 feet of black cord. Holds up pretty well. So easy to use, strong. Not the thinnest stuff in the world, not the lightest stuff in the world overall. But it works, it supports, and it's nylon, it stretches, and it appears to be UV resistant, which is a good characteristic. For all the other stuff that I do, and mostly I'm doing a lot of mountain topping, and for me weight is an important consideration, I'm using either Dacron line or I'm using Dymea, otherwise known as Spectra, which is a high-density polyethylene. And both the high-density polyethylene as well as the Dacron polyethylene, those are both naturally UV-resistant. Now, they tend not to stretch a little bit, but not much. So that comes into play later on if you're stringing stuff between trees and trees are moving. If you're using the Dacron and the PE-type stuff, you need to provide some other way of accommodating the distance change between trees as they sway violently in the wind during a storm. Let me let it drop. But the HDPE and the Dacron, you can get woven braided fishing line that works really well. And Dymea Spectra works great. You can get Dacron line and all sorts of things, including fishing line. It's cheap. You get it in hundreds of feet. And my favorite is fluorescent orange, because it stands out, people tend not to miss it, and if you drop stuff, it just doesn't match with anything in nature. That's my favorite color for gear, and if I've got devices that I might drop on the ground, especially in grassy areas that are small and easy to misplace, I'll put a little 3, 4, 5 inch piece of orange Dacron line on it, has a little flag, and now it stands out and I can't lose stuff. Back to net.
Yeah, and, you know, depending on the size of the Spectra, you can actually hang on that physically if you need to develop some sort of, shall we say, bracing or improvised rescue or securing apparatus for a person or their goodies while on a hillside. So it's also very good for that. And the high-vis stuff is works very well. It's funny you should say that, but I have, you know, 1-inch tubular nylon webbing all over the place for my tower climbing and antenna rigging and such like that. But I also have some loops of sewn Spectra. It's about not quite a centimeter wide, and it's a lot flatter, it's a lot easier to move around, God knows for its strength it's a lot lighter, in fact it is stronger than tubular nylon, so I like that stuff, so here. I will say this, and Tony K2AMI is not a fan of parachute cord. He had an experience where, you know, it rotted and basically came apart. And I have pieces here on the property that are 20 years old, holding heavy wire under tension. no problem whatsoever. I mean, absolutely none. So, as they say, go figure. It is an interesting question, but I generally buy white, by the way, if it's going to be in somebody's safety area, and I use black if it's going to be above. And if I'm teaching knots, I use a piece of black and white to so that people can see how knots are formed. I'll like cut off 2-3 foot pieces, fuse the ends on the stove with a piece of wet paper towel, and using the gas stove, and then I'll use that as an instructional element too. And by the way, that's the other thing. If you already know you're going to use lengths of this stuff for an antenna project, take it over to the gas stove, light up the end of the cable or the wire with the flame from the gas stove, and have a folded over piece of wet paper towel, and just take that molten paper towel and push it or pull it through, and instead of getting a fat blob on the end, you'll get a nice point on the fusing. Anybody else?
Yeah, just to emphasize what you said, Gordon, W2SC here. The spectrodymia is the strongest stuff you're going to find for the cross-sectional area. It's also a bit more expensive than Dacron and then nylon. If Tony had a problem with nylon, he had non-UV resistant nylon, which is the native version of nylon. You have to add additives to nylon to make it UV resistant. And Tony's clearly did not have the additives in it. In terms of additives, the dark colors of nylon paracord, all paracord, by the way, is nylon by definition. The darker colors, particularly black, is the best for in terms of UV resistance. So white is not as good even when it's treated. Dacron, you don't have to worry about it, and the spectra, you don't have to worry about it. Now, the really skinny spectra, I use a lot of 50 and 60-pound tests and 90-pound tests. If you run that quickly over your fingers, it will cut, I mean, really nastily. So you got to watch out for friction knots and all sorts of other things, particularly with the skinny versions of spectra. Just treat it with respect. But it does fit on really tiny fishing reels really well, so you can get 50 to 100 feet on a small reel or more, and it's great if you're putting antennas up in the field.
Yeah, good points, Bruce. Thank you. I haven't used the Spectra rope. As I said, I've used it for my safety lines for rabbit ears and things like that, hanging on my tower and stuff. If I have to bring up a rotator, I will often hook a loop of Spectra through the top clamp bolts, and then I'll put a carabiner on it, and I'll either use a lark's head around the bolts, and therefore the carabiner will offer a bite or a pull, and therefore a bite on the lark's head. And I'll actually hook it to my safety belt and walk up the tower that way. Or if I'm going out the third floor window onto the tower, I kind of cheat. I clip onto the tower while I'm still sitting on the window ledge, which is my normal practice, reach down on the floor of the attic here and grab the loop of 1-inch tubular nylon or the Spectra, and just reach out and make sure it's long enough and just clip it onto the tower. Then I'll go up onto the tower, clip the second safety line on it for myself, and then once I'm secured and stable, I'll reach down and grab the one for the rotator and pull it up, and keep hooking it onto the rungs. There are times when I've used heavier rotators, let's say the the tail twister or something heavier yet, and I'll use two, and that way there's always something on the tower. But most of the time for ham M's, ham 4 type stuff, I usually either clip it onto the tower and step it up, you know, a rung at a time, or I do something really novel and just hook it onto my safety belt and walk it up, dragging the extra 40 pounds or 30 pounds, whatever it is, up the tower, 20 pounds I guess it is. It's not a big deal. So anyway, it's all fun and good, and the spectra cord for dipoles on a small reel is really kind of amazing, and spectra in general is amazing. And by the way, I bought a roll, I think a 500 foot roll of the Dacron recently, a few months back, and I didn't get the new antenna hub that I wanted to put up, but I have to find the box with the reel in it, or the roll, and get going with that, because I wanted to put up some sort of inverted L and use the Dacron as the tension weight for it. All right, anybody else have any further comments on this? All right, let's do this in order backwards, or actually forwards. K2AIR, K2BAR.
K2EIR.
Anything more on this?
I'll tell you one other thing when you talked about Home Depot and putting things to use. I have projects here I haven't completed that I've started. I have two different loops. One loop is I bought 10-foot length of PEX polyethylene tubing. I wish I could get PEX, Alpex, that has an aluminum tube inside, but I couldn't, so I have for $5 or $6 you can buy a 10-foot length of PEX. You wrap this longitudinally with Reynolds Wrap aluminum foil or something similar. You coat it with masking tape, so now you have a 10-foot stick, if you will, that's aluminum foil underneath tape, and you can flex this into a loop, and you put in coax inside the loop. You close the loop up with something, and that's where I was when I was building this, like cable ties. You can glue cable ties each end, and so you still have a gap in the circular loop to move the coax. Put something around the coax like a cable tie. So now you can adjust the position of the coax within this loop, and therefore the capacitance changes, okay? That is your frequency tuning. You take a toroid at the opposite end of the opening to the loop, you put 5 turns of wire around it, and attach it to a coax, and now you have a loop very good for 20 meters. I've gotten it down to 1.1 SWR on 14.2. I imagine it could take 100 watts. there you have a cheap loop. The most expensive part probably is the toroid. K2EIR.
NJ2BS. Repeat.
Very, very nice, Howie. That's a great thing. And certainly 100 watts is probably reasonable for what you described. Okay, W2SC.
Howie, is this a transmitting loop or a receiving loop?
Well, I hope it could be used for transmitting. Again, I never finished the project.
Okay, you absolutely do not want to use aluminum for a transmitting loop.
And why is that? You think the losses will be too much?
In transmitting loops, there's very high circulating currents going around on the loop, and you want copper, you want thick diameter. Copper tubing, the flexible soft stuff works fine. Undoubtedly, you know somebody that knows of somebody lying around with some hard line, preferably copper hard line on the outer shell. A lot of the commercial loops are using RG8 or LMR 400. I mean, it's fine if you're trying to stuff it into a bag when you're all done, but it's lightweight and it's usually 40 meters and up. But if you're trying to build more serious loops, copper piping, copper tubing, it need not be round, it could be square, it could be octagonal. The shape isn't all that critical, but you want something with extremely low resistance.
Roger. Well, I still want to try this one, as you said, it's cheap. Now, I said I had another loop project, and that other loop I have hard line. I've got a gift with some hard line, and I have some copper tubing that I also bought at Home Depot, two of the long sections, and I got some aluminum tubing from DX Engineering. It's what the same diameter ostensibly, you know, number, same number of the diameter, say it's a half inch. One will fit into the other. And so I'm going to make a dual trombone capacitor for it. So I don't know how much loss that aluminum will be, but I think it's a good way of going. I still think it's going to be a heck of a lot cheaper than, you know, the commercial loops that you buy in your parameter service, K2EIR.
Okay. Very good, Bruce.
Use air gap capacitors. Some people use vacuum caps. Some people build a bunch of vanes and they attach it to the top or bottom of the opening on the loop, I'll call it. And they have vanes on both sides. They move the spacing between them to change them, and that becomes the capacitor. Some guys use the sliding approach that you come up with. But bear in mind that you could be looking at thousands of volts across that capacitor. So you need to run the right kind of insulation or enough air to cover the voltage based on how much power you're pushing through. And depending on the frequency and the length of the loop, there's a loop calculator online that'll tell you roughly how many volts and how many picofarads you need to get it to match on any particular band.
Yeah, this is K2EIR. Well, the insulated thing bothered me. I was going to buy Teflon sheeting. And that, again, bothered me from a budget point of view. So, you know, you can buy a roll of plumber's tape, which is Teflon, for $2. So I have two or three layers of plumber's tape on the tube. Again, it's so long since I worked on it, I don't remember if it's on the aluminum tube or on the copper tube. And I have a feeling that it'll take 10 or 12,000 volts. And my feeling is if I can't run 100 watts, I'll run 50, but I'm sure I can run a lot more than URP.
You won't get 10,000 volts out of plumber's tape, not even close.
Well, I hope to find out. I don't know what voltage I'll really develop.
Well, again, it depends on the power, the size of the loop, the coupling, a whole bunch of other variables that kick in there. But plumber's tape is not what I would use. I would use something a little more substantial.
Yeah, well, I think I actually looked up what the ratings were. I mean, unless they were cheating like some of the Chinese batteries. And by the way, most plumber's tape today is coming from China. The Teflon tape, if you do a couple of layers, you still have a substantial voltage tolerance there.
W2SC, I've got a bunch of Teflon insulated wire, the military spec Tefcell stuff. And that insulation, and you can see the specs online, is considerably thicker than this really skinny plumber's tape that stretches and distorts and whatever else. So, and that's usually rated at only 600 to 800 volts. So that'll give you an idea. Plumber's tape won't even come close. And then if you happen to stretch it, now you don't have a uniform dielectric there. Now you're going to have a weak spot somewhere and it'll punch through.
Well, that's what made me decide to do a couple of layers. So it got too thick, you know, and it starts binding as far as the trombone smoothly moving in and out. But, you know, regular insulated wire, you certainly can get 600 volts insulated wire, you know, without going to Teflon. At least I don't think it's Teflon. But, you know, that's readily available. That's what most, a lot of wire is rated at 600 volts.
W2SE, that's standard, Howie, and that's what it's designed for, and the TEF cell is designed for those kind of applications as well, is insulated accordingly. I just happen to like Teflon, particularly if I'm in the woods and in the trees, because it's really slippery, and it doesn't get caught up as much as the PVC-based insulation, and it doesn't nick nearly as bad and get distorted nearly as bad. And the Teflon wire that I've got is silver TEF, meaning it's copper-plated stranded conductor, and it's silver-plated. And silver happens to be among the best choices for a conductor. And if you're moving RF, most of your conduction is at the surface, skin effect. So silver is just great as a plated conductor on a wire. Aluminum is a very poor conductor, relatively speaking. Gold, oddly enough, is a poor conductor, but it doesn't corrode. Silver does corrode, but the oxide conducts even better than the silver itself. And copper is fine initially, but it starts corroding and it becomes not so good.
Yeah, I think I'm familiar with all of those. Thing is, I guess, I always want to build something and see, you know, kind of a prototype. And the first time I do it, I certainly want to cheat. If it succeeds outstandingly, and of course that's the catch, then I'd be willing to invest more, you know, do it a second time.
Yeah, now med loops have very, very narrow bandwidth, a couple of kilohertz in most cases. So you'll need a variable capacitor, and every time you change frequency, you need to retune. So that's something to keep in mind.
NJ2BS, repeat.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm beginning to lean to another antenna here, and I haven't been motivated enough to do the loop, finish the loop. However, when I bought some of the parts for the Trumbo capacitor, I did buy a motor, and I got some threaded rod. So the whole question is, I wasn't going to put that on the very first go, but I was hoping to eventually get it so that I could remote it and change the frequency.
Yeah, experiment and see what happens. You can always go to other things, but the tried and true on the loops, and I prefer insulated things, is basically find somebody that you know they can get their hands on copper-shielded hard line, or buy some scrap at a ham fest, or find stuff that's being pulled out of service and replaced, and use that for your loops. Other than that, plumber's pipe works great. Actually, tubing works best because it's more flexible. But you could take hard tubing, copper tubing, and you could put kinks in it every couple of 6, 8, 9 inches, whatever, and you can make more or less something approximating a loop, and that works well, and you can make it to whatever size you want, and if you want it longer, you can sweat the ends together. There's guys on the web, and there's tons of documents on the net web that have made loops out of 1 and even 2 inch copper pipes.
Yeah, I know. There's a Yahoo group called Back Loop. But I do have hard lines, so that's what I'm going to use with the Trumbo capacitor, if and when I ever get around to it. It's been here a couple of years already, so I still have other priorities. Okay, I think Gordon was asking me if I had any more, and I don't want to have to stay up all night. I'm done. this is K2EIR.
Okay, very good. Bruce, do you have any more?
No, I didn't really have any. I was just adding comments and adding some information to the discussion here. I do an awful lot of portable mountaintop work, so everything is lightweight, simple, easy up, easy down, multi-band, and I typically use end-fed wires up on mountaintop. The coax is the counterpoise. If I've got common mode RF issues, I wrap a couple of turns of coax through a type 140-43 core, 5, 6 turns, whatever. Whatever I can get depends on the power level. and that takes care of my problems, and that goes close to the rig. But because it's an unbalanced antenna, you've got your return coming through the shield of the coax as a counterpoise, even if you put a separate piece of coax counterpoise there. But I look for light, I look for easy up and down, and I look for, you know, quick going up and down, and I look for strength. Although, frankly, if you've got a lot of tension on a piece of wire that's up in the air, you're probably doing it wrong. 15, 20, 30 pounds, I don't think you should need more than that on antenna wire. Even something as long as 130 feet.
Yeah, absolutely. So, this small size, rope that you're using, I'm just curious, would you figure it's strong enough to hold up a piece of number 12, let's say 100 feet of number 12, or maybe even, 260 feet for a full-size 160 dipole? Do you think it has enough tensile strength to do that?
The wire, most certainly. The wire covered with an inch radius of ice? Nope.
I didn't ask about the wire. I asked about the line.
No, the line, that's what I'm talking about. The line will support the wire, just the wire, but if you add an inch of ice on it, all bets are off. But you can get a fishing scale if you're curious, Gordon, and they're relatively cheap, or maybe you know somebody like Harry, for example, that probably has something lying around. And you can actually put this on the end of an antenna. You can see exactly how many pounds of pull and stress you've got on it. Now, your real stress comes when you're operating it and the trees are swaying back and forth and you're tied to the trees. And hopefully you've got a rope going through a pulley and you've got some kind of a counterweight there to take up the slack. Otherwise, you know, use something else. I use stretchy paracord at home. And that's been working fine. And I've got 66 feet of wire up, and it hasn't budged in any of the worst winds or the ice storm last year. When all the hex beams were coming down, my off-center fed doublet stayed up.
Okay. Very, very good. All right. Let me see if there's anybody else who has comments or ideas for the net. All righty. Well, I think, gentlemen, if you don't have any further comments, I think I'm going to bag it. All righty, we'll take that as a yes. All right, well, everybody have a great night. I'm going to put a very provocative article link from Bloomberg Business Week on the ComTech group in a little bit. So duck and roll for that. And when you ask yourself, why did the U.S. Not want Huawei and a few other Chinese companies selling their phones here and other equipment in the United States, read about this other company that is selling stuff in the United States and what happened. Fascinating security article. So I'll be putting that up on the ComTech group in a few minutes. 73, and have a beautiful night. This is K2BAR W2TTT is saying 73. Thank you.
KA2YRA disconnected.
Gordon, W2SC.
73%. And by the way, the Barrett meeting is Sunday. W2TTT. See that?
Yeah, Roger. I've been getting emails about it, too. That's the regular monthly meeting. Howie, you still on frequency? K2EIR, W2SC.
NJ2BS, repeat.
K2EIR.
Yeah, Howie, if you were asking about toroids earlier and mixes and types of material, what frequency are you interested in?
3 to 30 megahertz. I've already put, just so you know what I've been doing lately, I have a whole bunch of 31 mix clamp on. But someone in the group here, maybe it was you, gave them to me, sent them to me, thank goodness. And I've been trying for years to get rid of my common mode noise here. Most recently, I took some of those clamp-ons, and I took some RG-303 or some very thin coax, and I made about five loops, about 4 inches in diameter, and put four of these things around it. In the part of the tail off of the loop, I put a FT, oh, I'm trying to remember, it's about 1 inch, but of 68 material, and on my, I did this at each end of my coax, and the other end, I didn't have a 68, I used a 2-inch 43 mix, and it has quieted down the noise somewhat, but not perfectly. So that's where I'm coming from on this.
Okay, well, it depends on the type of wire and the frequencies you're trying to kill, but Type 31 is generally good for suppressing RF, particularly in the HF spectrum, and it'll cover 3 to 30 fairly well. It will drop off if you look at the charts on 31 material. Ferrite makes this stuff, and their website has all the charts and the specs and the data sheets. But the 31 will drop off on the higher bands up around 12, 10, 15. It really comes into its own on the lower end of the spectrum. 43 is a little bit higher up. 43 will also do for RF suppression in certain areas, but depends what frequencies you're looking at. Let me let it drop here. And 31 is sound, but you can't get 31 in a lot of different sizes. It's mostly a 240, which is 2.4 inch size core you get the 31 material in. They don't make, ferrite doesn't make a 31 material in 140 size, which is 1.4 inch. So if I'm looking for smaller cores, I'll use type 43 for an HF choke. For transformers, I generally don't use 31 for transformers. There I'm typically using 31. There's a new material 52 out, but it's only in the bigger cores. It's supposed to be better. I haven't looked at the data yet. People claim it's less lossy.
Okay. Let me just see if I have it. Yeah. Well, just so you understand the antenna situation here, I am in a condo, and presently my HF antenna is an end-fed. I'm able to sneak it out, a wire out through the... you know, I have sliding deck door. In that space, I'm able to get the wire through. And on my living room side, I have a Palomar 4-to-1, 9-to-1, unon, you know, unbalanced, unbalanced. And the cable between the living room and the bedroom, which is where the rig is, the operating station where I am right now, the cable I'm using, it was some TV coax, you know, RG6, whatever. So there, it keeps changing. I have some RG6, I have some RG8, and whatever it's worth, I found that it will still allow me to operate okay. It used to do better. Since I've put on these chokes, I can't go on all the bands. But since I put on the chokes, the lower bands, 160, 75, are much, much quieter, and noticeably quieter. You know, instead of getting S5 to S7 noise levels, I'm getting S0 to S3. At 20 meters, it's a little quieter. And above that, which dropped off anyway, I don't know if I'm seeing much improvement. So, whatever that's worth, K2EIR.
Well, for manmoid noise, I don't think it's going to help all that much. I'm surprised you're getting a large benefit down on 160 and 80. I haven't seen those same kind of results on the receive side. I go for horizontal antennas down there. I've got noise sources. I'm going to have to chase them down. Where the common mode chokes really come into play is One to keep RF from coming back down the coax, and that works very well. The second thing, and the RF coming back down the coax is generally from an unbalanced antenna, and you've got reflections or SWR, I don't want that reaching the rig. The other thing I use, the Type 31s or the clamp-ons in particular, is USB cables, mice cables, DC power cords, and I put it as close to the power brick as I can. And I'll also try the clamp-ons through the AC power cord. Now, you're probably using the really skinny clamp-ons, about the size of RG58 or RG59 or RG6 coax. Get the medium-sized Type 31 clamp-ons, and now you can run a couple of turns, or a lot of turns, of AC power zip cord through it to suppress the RF. One turn through it doesn't do a whole heck of a lot. You're looking generally for about a dozen turns.
Yeah, as I said, five or six turns in the stuff I'm using right now. You know, thank goodness I bought this coax for like $4 for 15 feet. I think it's 15 feet, might be 15 meters. I'm trying to remember, 15 feet, I think, from China. And it turned out to be handy for things like, again, threading through doors, getting multiple turns through the clamp-ons. And I have a few different diameter clamp-ons here. Whoever was so good, and I said, I don't remember if it was you, somebody here on the group sent me a whole bunch of them, and I've been experimenting with them over the years trying to get rid of the noise, and I'm so happy I have the different diameters and that I have plenty, and I'm really beginning to use them now, and I'll probably do this on the switching supplies. You know, conduit, the AC wiring in the building, and it's like six apartments in my building, it just radiates all over the place. So even when I disconnected all the circuit breakers here, I was getting interference. And even when, you know, operating the batteries for the rig. But my own lights, my bathroom lights, puts a very loud noise. So right now I keep fantasizing how I can suppress the lights, you know, build my own adapter with a toroid in it or something like that, except I'm not very handy mechanically.
NJ2BS, repeat.
You gotta take your noise sources one at a time, Howard. What kind of lights?
They're GE bulbs, they're, you know, I don't know the names of these things. These are bathroom fixtures. This place was built in 1974, and in both bathrooms, they have like seven bulbs over the sink and mirror, seven sockets, and what I put in, these GE LEDs are 3.5 watts each, but they're very round. They're not your conventional bulb shape. I'm sorry, I don't know what they're called, but maybe they're just called vanity lights or something like that, but they're a known type. You can get them. I mean, what was here before was incandescent.
You're not going to quiet down LED lights. You could possibly put some chokes behind the lights, but where would you put it in the wall? You wouldn't have access to it. Replace the LEDs. Get better LED lights with quality filtering in them. That's the only real option.
Well, if you have any recommendations on that, send me an email. You know, it is a matter of cost, and both for the electricity and for the bulbs. The only bulbs I know of right now are the ones that the garage door maker came out with. I don't even remember the brand. But yeah, what I was thinking, you're right, I don't really want to tear the fixture out of the wall because it's so old to try to have anything done. What I wanted to do was build some sort of adapter that you screw the light bulb into the adapter and the adapter into the bulb socket on the wall. And if I could get a little suppression right there, I thought that might do the trick.
W2SC, not all bulbs are created equal, Howie. Some are just a whole bunch of LEDs in series, and then usually a current limiting resistor, and that's it. Other bulbs actually have a kind of a switching power supply in them, and those tend to be the noisiest. And if they're not constructed with shielding and filtering, then you might as well toss. And the only way you know if a bulb is quiet is to get one and try it, and if you don't like it, bring it back.
Okay. So now I have to find something in the right shape, at the right wattage, and experiment. I'll say it might, you know, again, the relief it might give me might be worth it. But again, even the bulbs, and to your point, one source at a time, is not the whole story here. There's just so many sources.
Well, if you're looking for artistic bulbs, as opposed to the classic bulbs that look like, 7,500 watt kind of round incandescent, those specialty bulbs are going to be odd, and I don't think a lot of people have studied those all that much.
Well, I've always gone for function over design or color. I mean, my wife and I have these big differences. You know, I always tell her when we're shopping for a car, don't even mention color to the salesman. You know, he's going to jack up the price for the color you want. So those are just differences. My wife seems to be happy enough with what we have now. And again, I made the decision to just go through the apartment and replace all the incandescents with LEDs. I haven't regretted that. I mean, there is the noise, but the difference in heat, the savings on electricity is, you know, very, very comfortable.
Yeah, you might want to look at the Cree's to begin with. The cheaper bulbs tend to be more noisy, and it's hard to characterize. There's so many manufacturers out there, and they all get the same emitters. There's only a couple people really making the emitters, but it's all the circuitry that goes along with it that will pulse it, particularly the dimmable LEDs. So the fancier they get, the more risk you have of noise. But the Cree's generally have been fairly good, but they've had a couple of clunkers too. So they've got different series of bulbs and different sizes of bulbs. And some are good and some are bad, and the only way to know is to try it. The really, really cheap ones from the dollar store, those are just emitters and a resistor. There's nothing special in them.
W2TTT.
Okay, Gordon.
I would agree with the Cree. I'm trying to remember the brand I use here for the, you know, recessed lights, the floods, but they're nice too. They're about 18 watts at the most, and they're 90 watt equivalents, and they're natural light. The ones you're thinking about for the vanity are round. They're almost spherical, and the LED ones have some really nice stuff. I believe those are made by Philips. You can buy them at Home Depot. And they're 50 watts a piece, or 50 watt equivalents, I should say, a piece. And they're delightful. They have a small Edison socket. I forget what it is, but it's an Edison type socket, but it's smaller. And we've got six or eight of them across the downstairs vanity in LED, and they're fine. So, you just have to, you know, make the bulbs go away. The thing I would just ask Howie real quick before you make any replacements, have you gone to the trouble of just unscrewing or turning off the bulbs to see if the noise goes away when they are not powered up?
Well, besides the fact that I did do the turn off all the breakers in that house and still found noise, you know, I did this a long time ago. For the bulbs, it's very obvious that they cause noise because I just turn off the switch and the noise goes away. Of course, it turns off the whole fixture of seven bulbs. I've got a bit of a problem in that my daughter is very observant religiously. So on any holiday and from Friday night to Saturday night for approximately 27 hours, the lights stay on. We can't turn them off because she has to go to the bathroom. She wants to have light, and I can't blame her. I don't want her to have an accident. But we don't want to turn them on and off for religious reasons.
You can give her two options. She can fund the electronic switch that will cause the lights to come on when she enters the room and turn off after a lack of motion after time. Or she can close the bathroom door when she's not in there and leave them on all night or all weekend. Or she said, God intended us to be good shepherds and stewards of his resources, and therefore, you know, incidental bumping of the light switch as you go in and out is fine. Just don't operate it with your hand.
NJ2BS, repeat.
Well, I've given up fighting with on these things in the family. You know, you gotta know what to, which battles you want to fight and which you don't, Gordon. By the way, before I forget, you didn't acknowledge anything, and I hope you did receive the interview with God and that you enjoyed it.
Oh my God, yes, I did, and I've been kind of like up to my ears and stuff lately, so a thousand pardons. Another thing is that leaving the lights on is irrelevant to the game. But getting the quiet bulbs is relevant to the game that you want to play. So I would go find out how many, you know, I would unscrew one of the bulbs, go to Home Depot, and look for the Philips bulbs that are equivalent. Buy the requisite number of bulbs, swap them out, and that's that. And if they are quieter, take the other bulbs and throw them in the dumpster and say, that's that. That way, everybody has the lights they need, when they need it, and you don't have to listen to the noise.
Right. Okay. And by the way, my bulbs have the full-size sockets, there's nothing reduced about it. Okay. Well, thank you, gentlemen, both. Certainly was an educational evening for me, and I love that intellectual stimulation. Believe me, I don't have much otherwise, and it's food for thought. I still have lots of goals, like building those groups, and I sometimes wonder now that I'm aging whether I'll get the projects done before I die or I'll die first. But I know it's going to be a long time. Anyway, good speaking to both of you. Bruce, a very good evening. Gordon, a very good evening to you. And tomorrow I'll try to finish up my thing on the election and post it on the Comtech group. I have to say, Gordon, that what you wrote about how you got along with Mike, I wanted to say the same thing about how you get along with me and vice versa. We have discussed both religion and politics, and we may be on opposite sides, if you will, or opposite parties or whatever, but I have always woken up in the morning respecting you. Hi, hi. This is K2EIR.
Yeah, so the way I take that is, I have a lot of friends who are damn fools, and they have friends like me who are damn fools, so it's the way the world works. Better find a way to live in peace, brother.
Yeah. By the way, I think I mentioned there is a movie that came out this summer. It was only in the theaters 3 days, and I don't know where it's going to go from there, called An Interview with God. And I saw the trailer. The trailer's up on the internet, and I really want to see that. So if you hear anything about it at any time, let me know. Okay. Yes. Whatever. What is it? The answer is 42. K2EIR.
Okay. 73. Highway 73, Bruce. Have a nice evening, and Godspeed. K2AIR, W2SC, W2TTT, and that article with a couple of links should be up on the Comtech group by now, W2TTT.
73, Gordon. And Howie, these lights are staying on for Shabbos?
Exactly.
And it's the prohibition against doing work?
I let my, I'm not as observant. I let my daughter decide, you know, whatever it is. I realize that religion is not logical, okay? Because, you know, the question, I always thought the reason you were not supposed to turn on a light is that it was a form of fire, that somewhere along the line they had to burn something to generate the electricity. But it turns out that apparently then, you know, not it. And all of these things, it all depends who your rabbi is, right? Or what you believe. So my daughter believes whatever set of beliefs she has. That's why I don't want to argue about it.
Hey, so let me ask you, refresh my memory. How many members of the Knesset are there?
I certainly don't know.
All right, let's say there's 60 members of the Knesset. Just pick a number, right? Assuming there's 60 members of the Knesset, there are 60 to the 60th power opinions. And that summarizes the problem. W2TTT.
Yeah, well, I also would like to say that the Knesset, Israel is mostly a secular state.
Well, that notwithstanding, it keeps Jews alive. I'm all for it. I mean, you're going to laugh, Howie. I am Israel's biggest fan, as it were. Yeah, you have this goyish, devout Roman Catholic who's absolutely pro-Israel, period. And, you know, I would like the other folks in Palestine to be happy, too. Please note how I phrase that. And it's a darn shame that the countries they came from shunned them, to create an artificial crisis. So, I'll leave it at that. W2TTT.
Okay. I can't help saying every time I go to synagogue and I read the prayer book, and I read the English, not just the Hebrew, oftentimes, and how often the desire is expressed for peace, and what we're asking God is to bring blessings, it's mostly to Israel, or Israelis, or Jews, if you will, but it also encompasses all mankind. That means more and more to me. You know, if only we could be at peace with everyone. That's how I feel.
Well, I think it was his last book. If you read Shimon Peres's last book, he had a plan for, shall we say, a two-state solution. And he honestly and earnestly believed it. The problem is he has folks on the other side who, you know, want to play rope-a-dope. And when I saw what happened to the tomb of Joseph when that land was returned to the Palestinian folks, that told me everything I needed to know as to whether or not we needed to give them anything more. We need to give them nothing more other than, you know, the option of Pax Romana. I'm a big fan of Pax Romana. Actually, I call it Gordon's peace policy in a modern term. You and I can live in peace, or I can live in peace. You let me know what you want to do.
Okay. I hope I didn't cut you off, Bruce, but you asked me whether it was because of Shabbos, and the answer is yes. Did you want to follow through with anything?
Actually, I do have some follow-through questions and maybe a couple of ideas. But understanding, if you look at what's going on over there, Gordon, you've got a group of people that are basically persona non grata from all the other Arab states. Nobody wants them. They're radicalized. They're Looney Tune crazy for the most part. They've got a corrupt terroristic government. And then you've got regimes like Iran that's throwing gasoline onto the fire. And those people don't want peace, period. And I don't know what the solution is other than eradication.
Look up Pax Romana and you'll understand. And I agree. All right, boys, I gotta get some sleep. W2TTT, it's been fun. 7-3.
See you, Garden 7-3, W2SC.
E2EIR.
Howie, could you ask your daughter what her objection to operating a light switch is? What specifically, religiously, is the thing she's trying to comply with?
No, I think I'll do that when I can.
I'm wondering if it's the, about lifting. I wonder if that's it.
Somehow I don't think so, but, I'll ask her. and I'll try to convey it to you.
Because there are other technologies. There are infrared switches where you walk into the room and the lights will turn themselves on and after a period of inactivity will turn themselves off. So you've got that. There are other switches. Basically, it's a capacitive plate. All you do is touch them. You don't actually physically move anything. And you can tap them on and off to turn electric lights on and off. So depending upon what she's trying to be observant with, there may be alternatives.
Yeah, but my understanding about this is if you're causing, if what you do causes the flow of electricity, if you will, and I think that's where it's at, then it doesn't matter about the means. It doesn't matter whether you turn on and off the switch. It's the same thing as as your emotion causes it. You know, and I'm sure that varies. Again, every community has its own rabbi, and it depends what he says. It certainly works that way in the Hasidic or very Orthodox community. I had some disagreements with an Orthodox Hasidic co-worker of mine, you know, about whether he could have food that came from the same town he lived in, and was certified by the what they call the VOD, the committee that determines kosher, in his community. And he said he would only accept it if his rabbi said it was okay. So, you know, you run into those things. As I said, religion is not logical.
Yeah, those are very strict interpretations, and I can understand it in certain sects. But to say that one Hasidic rabbi makes a judgment and a different Hasidic rabbi won't accept it, now you're getting really into splitting hairs. But I'd be curious, you know, what the thing is she's trying to avoid doing. And maybe there are technologies around that. I say, I like the infrared switches, those are nice, and the touch plate capacitive switches work great too. The other thing is, if you know, and coming up on Shabbos, you don't need to run a full-bore set of lights in that room. You can run a reduced set of lighting, turn some of them off, and that'll save electricity, but it's still usable in the evening and at night.
Yeah, I mean, if I want to save a little bit more of the 7 bulbs, I could unscrew 3 or 4. Actually, I tried that quite a while back. I used to just leave one on, and she told me it was too dim for her. Couldn't see her makeup as well or whatever. So then I put in another LED bulb instead. You know, when just before the Sabbath, I would unscrew all the bulbs enough to go off, and I would take one of them out and put in. She makes a bulb that I call a stick. It's a cylinder rather than a sphere. And I screwed that in, and that bulb is the equivalent of a 60 watt incandescent, and it turned out to be much brighter, glarier than the 7 bulbs we have in there at 3.5, that actually take 3.5 watts a piece, and she really objected to that, and the light bothered her. My daughter has some health issues, so she gets migraines, for example. There's something to that. this is why I indulge her, because I really don't want her to be... I know she experiences real pain. You know, this is not just a cranky kid. And she's not a kid anymore. She's 31. K2EIR.
Yeah, Roger, Howard, W2SC. I'm going to take a couple of wild guesses. Daylight type bulbs, and those are very bright and harsh at a lot of UV content. versus the warm white, which is a cooler color, a lower Kelvin, 3500 or so. The 6000, anything in the 6000 range is going to be very white and very bright, but also a fair bit of UV. The 32, 35 stuff down there, a little bit softer. The bulbs are not as efficient, but they're generally better tolerated by most people.